It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kend. NASA's three-year project to more accurately predict storms is concluding. Scientists went up into the eye of storms on over 30 flights to figure out what's really going on up there. Call in with questions about this research to help weather forecasters better predict snowstorms. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Lynn McMurdy is a meteorologist and research associate professor in the Department of Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Washington, and she led the NASA Impacts Project through this winter. Lynn, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Oh, I'm happy to be here.
Well, explain the importance of this project and what bearing it has on your research.
Well, thanks for asking. This research, we are examining the structures of snowfall within snowstorms. And the tricky part about that is in any kind of storm, the snowfall is not evenly distributed. It's often organized in certain ways, sometimes in banded structures. And we're trying to understand that aspect of the snowstorms. And by understanding that better, the processes that create the banded structures, the types of what's called microphysics or the cloud particles inside them, and how we can do remote sensing from radars and radiometers, this will help us improve our forecasting of those snowstorms and improve our ability to measure the snowstorms from space-borne instrumentation.
Is Mother Nature really that tricky? Why is predicting the exact amount of snowfall in a storm still so challenging?
Mother Nature is very tricky. It always has a trick up its sleeve, I'll tell you that. It's difficult because in a numerical model, which is what we use to help predict the placement of storms, these cloud processes are very, very hard to, you know, simulate. And we don't understand them well. And so that's why we are out there making measurements of as many aspects of the storm as possible to help improve our numerical models. So that's one aspect that's tricky. And I swear every time we went out on a flight and we had predictions of where the storms were, approximately where it might be snowing heavily, and we would go out there and it would not be the case. And we would go, oh no, we are in the wrong spot. We have to move over. And so it was difficult for even us trying to make our measurements to find the good spots to be to make them in the snowstorms themselves. Excuse me.
That's what I'm wondering. Did some of the aha moments and key breakthroughs in the research happen up in the air during these flights, or was it more down on the ground after you had really sorted through data and instrumentation and modeling?
Well, it's actually a little of both.
Okay.
I literally just got back from our third deployment less than a week ago. And so all the data that we collected this last year, this January and February, haven't analyzed yet because you have to do quality control. So it's going to be a while before we really dig in. So it's really a combination of both. When you're in the field, you're very much immersed in the details of each storm that you're sampling. And, you know, you're with your colleagues and you're talking about it as we're going, like, what do you think is going on here? Because we do see we have what's called quick look imagery that we look at real time as the aircraft are flying, and we're all scratching our heads trying to figure out what we're looking at. And so we talk amongst ourselves and have ideas, and we try to write them all down so we don't forget. And then later, after we kind of quality controlled individual people, will start digging much, much deeper into it. And some of our grandiose ideas we had in the field, we thought, oh, what were we thinking? Those are completely wrong. And others are surprisingly like, why? Why didn't we see this before? This is how it's working. So it's really a lot of both. You really need, you know, you have inspiration moments when you're in the aircraft, or in my case, I was often on the ground helping to direct the aircraft. And you have inspiration moments when you're alone with your computer and analyzing the data itself and seeing things you didn't notice before.
And your work has taken you through winter storms across the country, including here in the upper Midwest. What storms do you remember most vividly?
Boy, that's a tough question. Each year has kind of several very memorable storms. Last year, more of the storms were on the Northeast and up into Canada. And one of them was a classic nor'easter storm, and which is what we were hoping to get. We only got like one or two of those type events.
I was going
to
say, that's your bread and butter.
Yeah, you would hope. It's actually, people think it's common. It's not very common, I'll tell you that. It didn't happen often in the last 3 years that we were sampling. That one storm, we knew it was coming, but it was difficult to design how we were going to sample it. But finally, we get out there. The two aircraft, I could tell you a little background about how we're doing our sampling. We have two different aircraft that we fly in coordination with one another. So that means they're flying on the exact same line, but at different altitudes. So one aircraft always flies very high. It's, above 60,000 feet. It's called the ER2, and it has remote sensing instrumentation. Remote sensing means you're away from where you're trying to measure, but you use a technique like a radar. So it sends out a signal, and it backscatters back the information that backscatters varies depending on how much snowfall.
So that would be
rain.
Like a top down view of a storm system if you're up, 65,000
yes.
or so feet from that vantage
yes.
point. Okay.
Yes, you're exactly a top down, and it has a very detailed vertical distribution. So you see lots of details in a line. And so you can go back and forth on the same line, or you can move over if you do several lines in a row, like spatially, you can kind of map out in a three-dimensional way the structure of your storm. So that's one aircraft flying high up there. But the second one is one other people can be on. So I've ridden on this one before. I wasn't on this particular flight. And it flies inside the clouds at different altitudes, and at the same, usually pretty low. We vary between 25,000 feet and down to 5,000 feet above the ground. And so one of the things that you're trying to do in real time is tell that aircraft at what level to fly. So we told the airplane to fly, I can't remember exactly what it was, let's say 9,000 feet or 8,000 feet, like, okay, go in this line. And they hit the worst turbulence.
Oh, dear.
And so So the people on the plane, we can chat with them in real time, and we get these messages that go, whoa, this is worse than Six Flags. And then apparently the pilot said, we have to get out of this level. And they literally, without permission from air traffic control, went to a different level because it was actually getting dangerous. It was so rocky. So none of us expected that kind of turbulence. And so analyzing that case has been really interesting. There's lots of unexpected wave features in that case. Very strong, what's called shear, which is a change of wind speed with height, in a very short distance. That's usually what makes turbulence. Mm. One of the things I love looking at right after the flight is on that lower aircraft, it's called the P3. They have these called cloud probes. So they're actually taking pictures of the shapes of the cloud and precipitation size particles in the clouds. So, like when it snows and you hold your sleeve out, you see, oh, look, isn't that a pretty little dendrite star? Oh, those are all really cool. But they look pretty small. You can't really see the details. The cloud probes can really see the details. And so some of them are just amazing shapes and sizes, things you'd never seen before.
I love it. They're kind of like snowflake modeling in a way.
Yeah, they are.
Reintroduce you here, research meteorologist and atmospheric scientist at the University of Washington. Lyndon McMurdy studies the structure of storms, how they form, all these weather-related mysteries. Call in with your questions about weather radar, how predictive modeling works, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn what atmospheric scientists grapple with in modeling snowstorms and what's happening in ice-filled clouds. NASA's three-year research campaign called Impacts just wrapped up. Scientists flew on dozens of flights in severe weather. Call in with your questions and comments about storm prediction, 800-642-1234. University of Washington Research Associate Professor in Atmospheric Sciences, Lynn McMurdy, was part of the Impacts mission and stays with us. Lynn, I was so surprised. NASA said this was the first comprehensive study of snowstorms across the eastern U.S. in 30 years. And just think about how powerful computers have become in three decades. How did the technology help in this research and just so many of the latest and greatest new technologies out there?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's really evolved tremendous in the last 30 years. So I almost can't know where to begin. We use the technology we're trying to improve forecasting of weather, but it's really has improved a lot over the last 30 years, especially in the tracking of the storms. What needs more improvement is the distribution of snowfall and rainfall within the storms. That's where we're trying to improve. But the technology that we are able to fly these aircraft to be able to coordinate them, the software that we use to make sure we have both airplanes in the same location at the same time, to be able to, the way that we communicate with them, it's really mind-boggling. That and the instrumentation has really evolved a lot on our high-flying remote sensing aircraft, that we had four different radars at different wavelengths, the really extremely high resolution. The details we're getting just have not, been able to, what was it? We couldn't do that 30 years ago. The other aircraft with its cloud probes, and we had one of them, one that does the detailed pictures. Mm-hmm. That's very technical laser technology. Didn't exist 30 years ago. So wow. Almost every instrument we had did not exist, or at least not in the quality that we have it now.
Let's take a call now. Marcus in Milwaukee. Marcus, what would you like to ask?
Good morning. So my question for your guest is, what does she make of what's known as the phenomenon of a dead man walking, which is basically two tornadoes that wrap around each other? And literally, it looks like a dead man walking. The last one that I know in the United States, I believe it hit Gerald, Texas, and it killed a bunch of people. So I guess it's just like her thoughts.
Yeah, Marcus, thank you. I would imagine, too, you weren't flying into the eye of tornadoes.
No, we were not doing that. Yes. Yeah, that's too dangerous to do, obviously, because of the shear and such. So I'm not familiar with the event that the caller talked about, but tornadoes are a kind of a different type of phenomena than the snowstorms that we're sampling. Tornadoes are driven by very severe convection that organizes into a mesoscale rotation. And sometimes you can have two that are right next to each other and rotate in opposite directions. It is sort of like a ice skater effect. What a tornado does, the air comes in towards, it's trying to go up in a very strong updraft. But as it rotates around, it spins up into a funnel cloud. So, I'm not an expert in tornadoes, so I can't give you any more insights than to know that they're, please listen to whenever you hear a severe storm warning, because that means they've seen a signature of a potential tornado, and please take cover. That would be my opinion. Please take care of yourself if you're ever in that situation.
Such good advice. Lynn, back in 2020, when this program was launching, you talked about hoping it would really help advance storm prediction. And I'm wondering, has it achieved what you had in mind?
Well, that goal is probably our most long-term goal.
Okay.
We have done studies right now with our data from 2020. So that's like 3 years ago that we collected the data. And it's taken that long to analyze it, comparing what the model predicted for the snowfall and what we measured. So that's one of the ways that we can test how good our models are doing. We actually measure, make the measurements of the quantities that you need in your models to make snowfall predictions. And so we, of course, found that the model didn't do great. We tested different ways of running the models, and some did better, some did worse. So that's what, you know, one of our hopes is, like, can we find the best combination to of the different parameters that we have, you know, like sort of like turning knobs. You know, we can turn this knob or that knob. Which ones, how far should we turn this one? How far should we turn that one? So our measurements can help inform that. So I'm only at that stage. One of my colleagues who is part of the project is trying to use the data that we collect and initialize a model run. So every time you run a forecast model, you have to start it with observations, you know, and put it in a grid. And so that's called data assimilation. So they're testing using the detailed radar data that we collected. Can this help us make our predictions better? If you start with the right initialization, will you go forward in time better than if you didn't have very good starting point? So we're exploring that too. So this is going to, this is one of those long-term, will take a lot of time to understand and figure out.
Well, I appreciate you sharing this research, and thank you for joining us, Lynn.
Oh, I really enjoyed it. Thanks so much.
Lynn McMurdy is a meteorologist and research associate professor in the Department of Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Washington. She led the NASA IMPACTS mission this winter. It stands for the Investigation of Microphysics and Precipitation for Atlantic Coast Threatening Storms. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.